A major case lands before the Supreme Court. This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Thanks for being here. Let's do our usual review of state politics with Clark Riemer, Chief of Staff to Republican State House Representative Jason Sain, and Rob Schofield, Director of NC Policy Watch. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good to see you guys.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Should state courts have a role in limiting extreme congressional gerrymandering? That was the question at the heart of a case out of North Carolina before the U.S. Supreme Court on Wednesday. If a majority of justices accept the independent state legislature theory, they could do so narrowly or sweepingly. Either outcome is likely to fundamentally change some of the federal electoral infrastructure our country has known for centuries. Clark, first, what struck you about oral arguments?
Yeah, after a brief review of the oral arguments, I think you've got a, there may be a slim majority. There seemed to be some openness among the majority, among Chief Justice Roberts, Amy Coney Barrett, who certainly expressed some skepticism towards the more far-reaching independent state legislative theory. But there seemed to be, there might be, what I think the defendants are really asking for here, which is to put some parameters on how far the state courts can go so they cannot substitute their own policy decisions and beliefs for the beliefs of the legislature that is elected by the people to handle this issue, and that, frankly, the Constitution gives it in the clear text that this is a issue of the state legislatures. So I think you may see a narrow majority that says, yes, the courts have a role, but that role is not unlimited, and they still have to respect the final guidance of the state legislature as far as the policymaking process.
Well, obviously, there's some different views on what we heard. Some people are very hopeful. Some people are deeply worried. I think it's pretty clear that the sort of extremist right wing of the court, Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, seem sort of lost causes on this issue and willing to embrace this. It's not true, actually, that the North Carolina General Assembly defendants have actually just asked for some modest change. Their briefs talk about this sort of extreme remaking of our elections, and it seems as if those at least three justices are ready to go there. The question is, we've got three Republican justices, maybe sort of in the middle, with Barrett and the chief and Kavanaugh, and there's some hope that they will see the light. Again, it's Chief Justice Roberts who wrote in the Rucho case in 2019 that this was the job of state courts to deal with stuff like this. It's so entrenched in American jurisprudence that state judiciaries have the right to. And even North Carolina law talks about the judiciary here in our state overseeing elections and making sure that they're run in a fair and constitutional way. So, from my point of view, gerrymandering remains sort of the scourge on our democracy, whether it's being done by Republicans or Democrats. And I think it's fairly frightening that this, if we have a decision, even a so-called middle-of-the-road decision, could further entrench gerrymandering. So it's almost impossible to extract or evict from our political structure. So there's a lot of scholars across the ideological spectrum who are deeply worried about it. I hope that the court finally comes to that conclusion in the months ahead.
Clark, do we have agreement there between you and Rob? If the Supreme Court sides with Republican legislators, however they do it, we're effectively moving further away from having any kind of fairer, and I'm using air quotes here because fairness is in the eye of the beholder, but we're not moving any closer to an independent realm under which districts will be drawn. We're going to be more ensconced in gerrymandering, whether that's Republicans or Democrats in this state or Republicans and Democrats or another state. Are you and Rob in agreement there?
I don't know if we're in full agreement. What I'll say is that I think we're going to leave what is essentially a political question of what the district boundary should be to a political body and to an elected body that's elected by the people of all of our states.
And of course, the tragedy there is that the elected body that will be making that decision is actually only elected by a minority of the state, or at least only a small subsection of the state, because of gerrymandering. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so that's the problem. You can never extract yourself once one party takes control. And we see Democrats doing it in some states and Republicans in other. And it just, I think, breeds contempt and distrust and discouragement amongst the population in belief in their government that it's actually a fairly established institution.
So. Republicans won in 2010 under heavily gerrymandered maps by the Democrats that they had put in themselves, and that I think the congressional maps were struck down three times by the U.S. Supreme Court. back then. You know, if the people want change, they're going to get it. I don't believe that gerrymandering is the be-all and end-all of elections, and I don't think the evidence shows that.
Populations are shifting where people live. That factor is shifting in our state, has been for some time now. And in this state, this Moore v. Harper, pretty significant case before the Supreme Court. We do not expect there to be a ruling until late June. If either of you wants to push back on that conventional wisdom, please do. But that is the operating assumption as we move forward here. Next topic. In Moore County, the power is back on and a curfew has been lifted. This after someone or some people damaged two electrical substations using guns. We don't know yet who did this or why, but we do know the power went out at the same time a drag show was to take place. The FBI is aiding in the investigation. The governor has offered up a reward of $75,000 for information leading to an arrest and conviction. What next steps would you like to see either in this case or to prevent future incidents like this from taking place? Rob?
Well, clearly there has to be vigorous enforcement of the law. We need state and federal officials to come in and apprehend, discover who the perpetrators were, apprehend them, and prosecute them. This is an act of domestic terrorism. It's not run-of-the-mill vandalism. And we know that, indeed, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's National Terrorism Advisory System had warned of a heightened danger of these kinds of ideologically driven attacks on infrastructure. Since the attack, there has been a big uptick in white supremacist, sort of neo-Nazi channels out there on the internet where they've been praising the attack and calling for more of them. We obviously don't know at this point whether that is what happened here, but there's certainly reason to be concerned that that might have been what was caused here. And regardless of that, as we go forward, there's clearly, as our Joe Killian reported in NC Policy Watch this week, a link between politicians and advocacy groups that espouse hateful language, that propose legislation to target LGBTQ people, and an uptick in sort of violence and acts by hate groups. We've had these protests by masked armed demonstrators outside drag shows. This is a very dangerous cycle we're finding ourselves getting into, and we need leaders of both parties, all persuasions, to stand up and say, enough of this. This is not what we do in America. This is not how we settle our debates and our discussions. We need to stop the violence now.
Yeah, number one, I think we need to see, and I hope we see very soon, the perpetrator brought to justice by state, federal, and local officials. They seem to be cooperating well, and the investigation's ongoing. So hopefully very soon we'll see an arrest and that person prosecuted or persons prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And secondly, I think this highlights what has been a long-term issue in this country, which is the vulnerability of our infrastructure to these sorts of attacks, to small-scale lone wolf attacks, or to, a lot of this infrastructure, especially these electrical substations, are in very rural, very out-of-the-way places. They're not well secured. So that's something we've got to look at in the future, is how to harden these targets, how to make sure that our system has some resiliency against terrorism, no matter how and where it's brought from, because these attacks have happened before. There's been two or three other incidents of attacking substations from various types of extremists. So I think that's something we need to look at very seriously.
And I ask this next question honestly, if not admittedly ignorantly, what does that look like? Are those fences? Are those guards, armed guards? How do we achieve what you were just talking
sure.
about?
My guess is that there are in most cases already fences just to keep the random passerby out of these sort of things. It's probably a lot of electronic monitoring is a first step, and looking at what we can do there, you're responding faster, and then looking at how we can build a grid that if there is some sort of incident, we can quickly respond to it so people aren't left 4 or 5 days without power. We can do things where we reroute things. And, that's certainly a broader conversation. And I'm not an expert in the electrical grid, but it's something we need to take a look at.
Clark, Rob mentioned domestic terrorism. Would you like to see charges that reflect that?
If it looks, when a perpetrator is found, if they are brought to justice and it looks like they had an ideological bent to why they created this, it wasn't some, sort of random act, and it doesn't look like it is, it looks like it was very intentional, then I think that would probably be appropriate.
Sounds like we're in a lot of agreement on this one.
One more topic. I don't know if we're going to find agreement here. It'll be interesting. U.S. Senator Tom Tillis is again pursuing a bipartisan deal, this time with Arizona Democrat Kristen Sinema. Their focus is on immigration. The soon-to-be senior senator out of our state has had a seat at the table for some notable pieces of compromise legislation this year. Time is running out on a deal specific to this immigration issue. There, of course, is going to be another Congress in a month. But I'm interested, what do you make of the role Tillis seems to be carving out for himself as something of a deal maker, working both sides of the aisle on Capitol Hill? Clark?
I'm not surprised at all. I think that's who Senator Tillis has always shown himself to be. I remember a few years ago him standing in front of the NCGOP convention and said, "I am a rhino. I'm a Republican in need of outcomes." And that's what I think that was the 2020 election where he said that. You know, that's who he is. That's who he was when he was House Speaker here. That's who he's been as a senator. He's looking to find solutions for the American people, and I'm quite proud to stand with him.
Well, you know, it's encouraging to a certain extent. I mean, it's weird in a way because he continues to mouth sort of these reactionary platitudes. He continues to at least nominally have supported Donald Trump. You know, although you can just read his body language and his personality to know his heart's not really in it. I guess he feels like he has to say and do certain things to keep the Republican base happy. My understanding is he's sort of been, you know, criticized roundly for having also worked with Senator Byrd to get the LGBTQ marriage equality bill or the respect for marriage law passed through. That's actually on its way to the president's desk as we record this. So it's interesting. I think it is encouraging that he's not espousing just extremist points of view like so many of his Republican House colleagues who, for instance, all voted unanimously against the marriage equality legislation. It's clear that we desperately need the DACA legislation that he's working on. We are in a preposterous situation where we have something like 600,000 younger people in America who are as American as you or I. They've spent their whole lives here virtually. And the notion that we would ever deport them, which is sort of where the direction where we seem to be headed with these rulings from Trump judges striking down the DACA program, we've got to come up with a solution. And indeed, we need a solution for millions of immigrants and refugees who are as American as you or I, critical to our economy. They need to stay here. They need to have a path to citizenship. I mean, Tillis has said these kinds of things before. He got in trouble with Trump at one point for some of his stances on immigration, and he sort of did a big 180 on it. Let's hope now with Trump increasingly out of the picture, he has the courage to sort of stick to his guns.
I'm going to go second level here and entertain. I don't even know if it's the rumor mill, but I guess I'll just put out there, you know, the theoretical conversation, not theoretical, the conversation is happening in some, like, in the bubble circles. Tom Tillis has interest on some level of becoming governor of our state. I'm not convinced he can get through a Republican primary. Clark, you can take this in any direction you want, but Rob, the question for you first is, would you like to see Tom Tillis leave the U.S. Senate and run in a primary, presumably against Mark Robinson, or maybe some finagling can happen to move Mark Robinson over. Would you like to see Tom Tillis come back to this state and run for governor?
I don't know whether I'd like it. I can imagine that a lot of Republicans would like it. I know there is deep concern in the Republican Party that Mark Robinson is just a menace and a true wild man who's going to be a big problem for their party. He espouses these truly frightening views on so many issues. He has so little experience in government. I've heard that there's talk of trying to find him a congressional seat or some place to put him where he wouldn't, you know, be so much of a threat to the state. So maybe, you know, maybe Tillis feels like doing that. There are a lot of people who have actually run for governor after being U.S. senators because they see it as a better gig. You're sort of in charge instead of just one of 100. And I'm of the opinion that just about every politician who's ever run for governor or Senate or Congress can envision a scenario where they get to be vice president and president of the United States. I'm sure Tillis in his dreams at night can concoct such a scenario for himself. So I wouldn't be surprised. I don't have a real strong point of view on whether it would be good for the state or not.
I don't know what the senator is thinking. I think those rumors are out there, but there's always all sorts of rumors flowing around Washington, D.C. and Raleigh. But I think that the lieutenant governor is a formidable candidate. I think that Tom Tillis has shown himself to be a formidable candidate. So, you know, we just got past one election. I don't know if we need to dive right into the next one, but we'll see what happens. And I think it'll be interesting.
I should know better than to play the rumor game, but we did it anyway, so thanks for entertaining me. Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Clark Reamer is former chair of the North Carolina Young Republicans. Thanks, guys. Enjoy your weekends.
Take care, guys.
Thank you. Enjoy it.
Politics podcast here for you, still here for you, a couple times each week. On Wednesday, we dropped an episode that's all about this independent state legislature theory, a lot of background and context. We talked to a political scientist from MIT, a legal expert from the University of Michigan. Would encourage you, and we've got some archival tape in there too from Bush v. Gore 22 years ago. Encourage you to check that out if you have yet to do so. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll be back with you next week. You like being a big brother?
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about being a big brother?
When the sister came out.
When the sister came out? Yeah. What do you love doing with your sister now?
Playing.
What kind of things do you play?
Toys and stuff.
Toys and stuff.
Have a nice weekend.